Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel, and say to them, When you come into the land of Canaan, this is the land that shall fall to you as an inheritance, the land of Canaan to its boundaries. Your southern border shall be from the wilderness of Zin along the border of Edom. Then your southern border shall extend eastward to the end of the Salt Sea. Your border shall turn from the southward side of the ancient Akrabim, continue to Zin, and be on the south of Kadesh Barnea. Then it shall go on to Hazar Adar, and continue to Asmon. The border shall turn from Asmon to the brook of Egypt, and it shall end at the sea. As for the western border, you shall have the great sea for a border. This shall be your western border. And this shall be your northern border. From the great sea you shall mark out your border line to Mount Hor. From Mount Hor you shall mark out your border to the entrance of Hamath. Then the direction of the border shall be toward Zedad. The border shall proceed to Ziphron, and it shall end at Hazar Enan. This shall be your northern border. You shall mark out your eastern border from Hazar Enan to Sepham. The border shall go down from Sepham to Riblah on the east side of Ain. The border shall go down and reach to the eastern side at the sea of Chinnereth. The border shall go down along the Jordan, and it shall end at the Salt Sea. This shall be your land with its surrounding borders, boundaries. Then Moses commanded the children of Israel, saying, This is the land which you shall inherit by lot, which the Lord has commanded to give to the nine tribes and to the half-tribe. For the tribe of the children of Reuben, according to the house of their fathers, and the tribe of the children of Gad, according to the house of their fathers, have received their inheritance, and the half-tribe of Manasseh has received its inheritance. The two tribes of the half-tribe have received their inheritance on this side of the Jordan, across from Jericho, eastward toward the sunrise. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, These are the names of the men who shall divide the land among you as an inheritance, Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun. And you shall take one leader of every tribe to divide the land for the inheritance. These are the names of the men from the tribe of Judah, Caleb the son of Zephaniah, from the tribe of the children of Simeon, Shemuel the son of Amihud, from the tribe of Benjamin, Eliadad the son of Chislon. A leader from the tribe of the children of Dan, Buki, the son of Jogli. From the sons of Joseph, a leader from the tribe of the children of Manasseh, Hanael, the son of Ephod. And a leader from the tribe of the children of Ephraim, Kemuel, the son of Shiphtan. A leader from the tribe of the children of Zebulun, Elizaphan, the son of Parnach. A leader from the tribe of the children of Issachar. Paltiel, the son of Azan, a leader from the tribe of the children of Asher, Ahud, the son of Shilomai, and a leader from the tribe of the children of Naphtali, Pedahel, the son of Ammihud. These are the ones the Lord commanded to divide the inheritance among the children of Israel in the land of Canaan. And the Lord spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from Jericho, saying, Command the children of Israel that they give the Levites cities to dwell in from the inheritance of their possession. And you shall also give the Levites common land around the cities. They shall have the cities to dwell in, and their common land shall be for their cattle, for their herds, and for all their animals. The common land of the cities which you will give the Levites shall extend from the wall of the city outward 1,000 cubits all around. And you shall measure outside the city on the east side 2,000 cubits, on the south side 2,000 cubits, on the west side 2,000 cubits, and on the north side 2,000 cubits. The city shall be in the middle, and they shall belong to them as the common land for the cities. Now among the cities which you will give to the Levites, you shall appoint 6 cities of refuge, to which a manslayer may flee, and to these you shall add 42 cities. So all the cities you will give to the Levites shall be 48. These you shall give with their common land. And the cities which you will give shall be from the possession of the children of Israel. From the larger tribe you shall give many, from the smaller you shall give few. Each shall give some of its cities to the Levites in proportion to the inheritance that each receives. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, When you cross the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall appoint the cities to be cities of refuge for you, that the manslayer who kills any person accidentally may flee there. They shall be cities of refuge for you from the avenger, that the manslayer may not die until he stands before the congregation in judgment. And of the cities which you give, you shall have six cities of refuge. You shall appoint three cities on this side of the Jordan, and three cities you shall appoint in the land of Canaan, which will be cities of refuge. These six cities shall be for refuge for the children of Israel, for the stranger and for the sojourner among them, that anyone who kills a person accidentally may flee there. But if he strikes him with an iron implement, so that he dies, he is a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death. And if he strikes him with a stone in the hand, by which one could die, and he does die, he is a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death. Or if he strikes him with a wooden hand weapon, by which one could die, and he does die, he is a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death. The avenger of blood himself shall put the murderer to death. When he meets him, he shall put him to death. If he pushes him out of hatred, or while lying in wait, hurls something at him so that he dies, or in enmity he strikes him with his hand so that he dies, the one who struck him shall surely be put to death. He is a murderer. The avenger of blood shall put the murderer to death when he meets him. However, if he pushes him suddenly without enmity or throws anything at him without lying in wait, or uses a stone by which a man could die, throwing it at him without seeing him, so that he dies while he was not his enemy or seeking his harm, then the congregation shall judge between the manslayer and the avenger of the blood according to these judgments. So the congregation shall deliver the manslayer from the hand of the avenger of blood, and the congregation shall return him to the city of refuge where he had fled. And he shall remain there until the death of the high priest, who was anointed with the holy oil. But if the manslayer at any time goes outside the limits of the city of refuge where he fled, and the avenger of blood finds him without the limits of the city of refuge, and the avenger of blood kills the manslayer, he shall not be guilty of blood, because he should have remained in his city of refuge until the death of the high priest. But after the death of the high priest, the manslayer may return to the land of his possession. And these things shall be a statute of judgment to you throughout your generations in all your dwellings. Whoever kills a person, the murderer, shall be put to death on the testimony of witnesses. But one witness is not sufficient testimony against a person for the death penalty. Moreover, you shall take no ransom for the life of a murderer who is guilty of death, but he shall surely be put to death. And you shall take no ransom for him who has fled to his city of refuge, that he may return to dwell in the land before the death of the priest. So you shall not pollute the land where you are, for blood defiles the land, and no atonement can be made for the land, for the blood that is shed on it, except by the blood of him who shed it. Therefore do not defile the land which you inhabit, in the midst of which I dwell, for I, the Lord, dwell among the children of Israel. Now the chief fathers of the families of the children of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, of the families of the sons of Joseph, came near and spoke before Moses and before the leaders, the chief fathers of the children of Israel. And they said, The Lord commanded my lord Moses to give the land as an inheritance by lot to the children of Israel. And my lord was commanded by the Lord to give the inheritance of our brother Zelophehad to his daughters. Now, if they are married to any of the sons of the other tribes of the children of Israel, then their inheritance will be taken from the inheritance of our fathers, and it will be added to the inheritance of the tribe into which they marry. So it will be taken from the lot of our inheritance. And when the jubilee of the children of Israel comes, then their inheritance will be added to the inheritance of the tribe into which they marry. So their inheritance will be taken away from the inheritance of the tribe of our fathers. Then Moses commanded the children of Israel according to the word of the Lord, saying, What the tribe of the sons of Joseph speaks is right. This is what the Lord commands concerning the daughters of Zelophehad, saying, Let them marry whom they think best, but they may marry only within the family of their father's tribe. So the inheritance of the children of Israel shall not change hands from tribe to tribe, for every one of the children of Israel shall keep the inheritance of the tribe of his fathers. And every daughter who possesses an inheritance in any tribe of the children of Israel shall be the wife of one of the family of her father's tribe, so that the children of Israel each may possess the inheritance of his fathers. Thus no inheritance shall change hands from one tribe to another, but every tribe of the children of Israel shall keep its own inheritance. Just as the Lord commanded Moses, so did the daughters of Zelophehad. For Milah, Tirzah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Noah, the daughters of Zelophehad, were married to the sons of their father's brothers. They were married into the families of the children of Manasseh, the son of Joseph, and their inheritance remained in the tribe of their father's family. These are the commandments and the judgments which the Lord commanded the children of Israel by the hand of Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from Jericho.
Okay, so we have in chapter 34 the borders of the inside of Israel, not the ones outside. The outsides are already determined and already were done on the east side of the Jordan River. And chapter 25, what is it about? Well, it has to do with... I'm sorry, what? 35. It has to do with the house or the tribe of Levi and the certain cities that they are to have, and what the purpose of the cities, of at least six of those cities, and what the purpose of them for. And it goes in quite detail. And of course, 35, the last 36th chapter, has to do with the marrying of, if a man has no sons, but he has daughters, his daughter must marry within that family tribe, in order that during the time of Jubilee, he'll still remain within that tribe inheritance and not be given to somebody else from a different tribe. So, that being that said, any questions? Wait.
Just a word question. Is the house and a tribe the same thing?
Sorry, what?
Is the word house and the word tribe, are they the same thing? Like you said, the house of Levi and the tribe
no,
of
no,
Levi.
No. Tribe is a tribe. A house is a different. Okay, a tribe is a branch that comes from the house. So the house of Israel had so many branches coming out from it, and the house of Judah had so many branches coming out, meaning tribes. The word tribe means a branch. Okay? Any comments? Any thoughts? Should we close the book and say goodbye? In the area we're talking about now, let's go to chapter 34 for beginning of the territory. That's within the region of, let's say, the Jordan River to the Mediterranean. And that's the big ocean, the big sea. Remember, that was called the Western one. The Southern one does start about in a place, it's got a funny name for that place, Achribim. Which means, actually, and literally, it's a scorpion. It's a place where, not a place for scorpions. I had to look this thing up, so that's a really odd name for a place, a territory. And it's very funny about that terminology, scorpion. There is a passage or an ascent going into or going down into it, depends upon what it is. And basically, it comes from a Hebrew word, and it has to do with, literally, being scourged, being punished, or being something in a different direction. It has to do, the Hebrew verb for it is one that picks. I don't mean pick things up, but pick, like picks on you, or pokes you, or injures you, like a scorpion does. Okay? In the book of Deuteronomy, we won't go there today, but when Moses is talking about the time when they had the serpents were out there, and God used them to kill the people off, all right, in there he says there were many fiery serpents and scorpions. So there were scorpions also there, even though the book of Numbers doesn't record it. So those two creatures were present at the time when the snakes were there. So it was not more than just the snakes. But they're also with us. There's also scorpions that were sent out in that particular area. Generally speaking, they're saying because this area is in the southernmost district along the what's called the Salt Sea, biblically, but we call it the Dead Sea, and it's the very, very southern tip of it is where this particular area was, where Sodom and Gomorrah were, and of course they were long destroyed many, many years earlier. Yeah, so now that's where the land began. They started moving south toward what's called the river of, or not the, the Wadi of Egypt. And it, that river went to the sea. And so there's a, it was, Wadi is a river that dries up during a non-rainy season. And the southern part of Israel, is desert land. It was desert land at that particular point in time as well. Not very many things grew at that particular place and area. So, he actually gave them a period of a desert land as well. So that just tells you a little bit about the territory. And of course, we talked about the west, and that's all the way across to the Mediterranean border. And in the northern border, it's a little interesting. It starts at the Mount Horeb. Remember what happened to Mount Horeb? Remember what happened to Mount Horeb? Where? Yes, where Aaron died. So actually, we're quite far north. When Aaron died. And so now it goes from that point, and it goes along an area along the northern thing, and from there's the Great Sea, the border for the area for the Great Sea, the northern border, pointing all the way heading toward an area close to Lebanon, and what we call it today. Actually, it's a valley. It says there, in the interest of Chabot. Chabot, which basically means fortress or walled city, which was the upper city or a city within a valley that was in the area of what we would call today Syria. So we're going all the way, and there is a river that goes through that area. And in that river, it travels on a westerly direction, and it slowly goes north, and then it goes down to its northwestern direction again. And finally dumps into, of course, the sea. But it goes through Antioch, goes through Turkey, it goes through into the Mediterranean. It's over 230 miles. And it says along the mountains, so along the mountain, there's the edge of the mountains is up along that area. So it tells you where, that area, by the way, still exists today. But it's farther north than we think of Israel today. It's much farther north. And they possess that land very close to the land of Turkey. Because the river went up through Turkey. As not a modern-day Turkey. So the land was actually farther north than we see today, or aware of today. Aware, I don't have. I tried to look some maps, and there's a program I could buy, but I didn't want to buy it today, because it's Shabbat, you know. So I don't buy it. To certain maps that you can download, and you'll be able to see these maps online. Kind of fascinating thing. And so then we go to the east, which is kind of self-explanatory. It's all along the Jordan River, going all the way south, and it starts from the very northern section of northeast section, and a place called Safon, which means bald. And I said, well, that's a weird name, so I had to go find out what it means. It means it's an area in the eastern border that had no trees. So that funny terminology, we think bald-headed, that meant the mountain or area, but there were no trees around about it. And that's what they called bald. That's old terminology. No trees, so it's bald. Didn't mean not the land was not there. Didn't mean the land couldn't grow something on there. Didn't mean the land was not productive. It just it was below what we call the timber line. Okay, down below the timber line, and or maybe above the timber line, probably above the timber line, because it's along the mountain area. It's kind of an interesting terminology why they use these things. And then it says they went down to a place called Ribla, which means a very fertile area, a land that was had really good, able to produce good and quality crops as they head farther on south. All the way until we reach a place called, in verse 11, it says, unto the side of the sea of Chinnoreth, which is the Sea of Galilee today. So all that area is Sea of Galilee. They begin. It's in the 11th chapter. The last word there in Hebrew, in the 11th chapter, I don't know what it says in some translations, but basically it's the Sea of Galilee. Chapter 34, verse 11, and shall reach the sides of the sea of, and it's supposed to be Sea of Galilee, we think of it today. Okay? And the border goes on, and it shall be at the Salt Sea, which is called the Dead Sea. We call it the Dead Sea today. It's a Salt Sea called then. And that was their land. So we have from the going south, heading southward toward the Mediterranean, and then going all up north along the west side, Mediterranean, then going from the west side, heading all the way up, including into areas which was today modern Turkey and part of Syria, and grab that part. They come down, heading down south on the east side along the Jordan River and then along the Galilee all the way down unto the end of the Dead Sea. We're kind of like you're back to where you started from. Very, it's southern end of the Dead Sea or the Salt Sea. It started there in the first verse, the first part about the south. So it just tells you some interesting things. I couldn't figure out, I tried to figure out any fascinating names of some of these places. And some of them were kind of interesting. One of them was bald. And I said, that's an interesting terminology. And I had to do some research on it. And it didn't mean bald, like I think bald. It means there's no trees. A kind of fascinating terminology. I never heard of that terminology before. And then, of course, there was the nine tribes and a half. Yes?
There's actually a mountain that takes the extension of San Bernardino Mountain in Southern California. It's called Mount Balding because there are no trees.
That's the same kind of terminology. That's interesting. I'm sorry, what? Yeah, it's fascinating. It's been.
Question is, you say part of Syria. Would it have gone all the way to Damascus? I mean, we're saying.
Oh, no, not that far east.
Because it was, that's east.
That's too far east. Damascus is too far east.
Okay.
Although Abraham traveled that far. But that's because he's at war. But he didn't stay there. No, that city is still in existence. This city of a fortified city still exists today. I don't remember the name of it right now today, but it still exists as a city, or not a fortified city. It was at one time a military outpost, basically. Every time they use the word fortified, or every time they use the word walled city, in that terminology, it means that's where their army was, or the outskirts of their last border. Okay? That's basically what it's down to. And then along comes the last part of the chapter, which there was a certain thing that had to happen, and that is that since Reuben and Gad and part half of Manasseh already had received their inheritance, no one was named to appoint in the tribe of Reuben, in the tribe of Gad, or in the half the tribe of Manasseh, who was to divide the land up. They apparently just did it, and it was okay. I don't know why, but now here, God talks to Moses, Yahweh talks to Moses, and he said, now these are the names of the men that shall divide the land. And so now we have of Judah, it's Caleb, and of Simeon, Shemuel, Wait, Caleb means dog, right? And then the son of Simeon is Shemuel, means his name is El. And then the next one, Benjamin, his name, Eldad, my God has loved. And the name of the Dan, the son of the children of Dan, of Buki, means wasting. Don't ask me that question why. And then the name of the Manasseh was favor of God. And the one of Ephraim is Camille, raised of God. And then the one of Zebulun is Ilsaphan, my God has protected. And of Issachar is Paltiel, God delivers. And of Asher is Achihad, and is the brother of majesty. And then of Naphtali is Penetol, it's a ransom of God. So these names are fascinating. What did you find interesting about these names so far? Manasseh, in verse, It says that the son of Manasseh was Hadriel, verse 23, and his name means favor of God. Right. Yeah. Well, I'm not explaining the names of the tribes. Yeah. I just named the name of the men that God appointed. Now, we go back just a little bit, kind of find out what the names of the fathers were. If you want to stick with me on this one. Of Caleb, his father's name means he will be facing. I wonder what he'll be facing at. That's the word to do with face. And the name of Shemuel, his father's name means my kinsman is majesty. And the father of Chesalon means confidence. The father of Eldad is Chesalon, and it's confidence. And of Buchan from the tribe of Dan is Jogil, he is excellent. And of the tribe of Joseph, that is from Manasseh, his father's Harnil's, his father's name was Ephod. What's Ephod? Around? All right. It's that what that went around the priest's chest. Kind of fascinating terminology in that particular thing. They don't have a reason behind it, but just that his name means an Ephod. And under Ephraim of Kimuel means praise of God. Is the son of Shephata, means just being a judicial. He was a judge. He's the one that made a judgment or was part of it of a judicial system. I don't, as far as I can say. And the father the Zebulun. The man who was the name means my God has pointed. His father's name means delegate. So he had to delegate things out. He's the one that was appointed things out, and so on and so forth. It's kind of fascinating going through the names. Now, the 25th chapter, going into the book of Leviticus, what do you think that's telling us? It's probably the most fascinating of the three chapters. Means there's four cities per tribe. What was the city of refuge about? What was it for? Okay. Ellie?
To be sure that if something went violently wrong that people had a chance for a fair trial.
All right. And all we really see, all right, is those who do not get to go to the city of refuge. First thing it tells you, there are people who, yes, if you accidentally or unwillingly or unknowingly or didn't mean it, okay, you have a place that you can flee to until the hearing is heard, the judgments are made to find out whether or not something took place. And what's fascinating about that, as you go through this chapter, you start standing here and you start saying, okay, so someone killed somebody, either by accident or unknowingly or unaware or accident, completely accident, and the Bible covers that case. But it's very fascinating here. The first thing it says here, verse 15, the sixth city shall be refuge, verse 15 rather, for both the children of Israel and for the stranger and for the sojourner. So anybody in the land, whether they are foreigners coming in for a visit, back in those days, didn't they have to have a visa to enter into the city or into your country? You didn't have to have a passport. You just went. It was always a completely open border. There was no such thing as a closed borders with military and wired fences and machine guns and all that kind of stuff to keep the somebody who's coming into your land from coming in. They just came in. And you could go where you wanted to go too. Okay? The difference between the rules that God established here in Israel was different than the rules of any other country. And that included the sojourner, the one who's just walking through your town, walking into your city, and something happens, and somebody is by either maybe killed, maybe injured, whatever. The first thing, though, he says, verse 36, if he smites him with an instrument of iron. Remember, he talked about the six cities of cities of refuge. Now, however, how do you find out if it was done? Well, you know, you have to have a judicial system. They have to find out how the person died. And God just makes it real simple, doesn't he? Okay, so what if someone flees the city and says, I accidentally hit this guy with a rod of iron. Oh, really? Let's investigate this thing. Guess what happens? The city does not protect him. He will be, and God calls him, a murderer. The murderer shall be put to death. The second one had to do with the stone. Well, I just threw a stone. I didn't know it hit. Wait a minute. If you smit him, well, throwing, if your object is to kill him, that's what smit means, to kill or to slay. And guess what? You're a murderer. Now, as we go in, the next one has to do with a wooden weapon or something of a wood made out of wood, like a baseball bat. Accidentally, I swung, and it didn't mean to hit him in the head, but it hit him in the head. No, you swung to kill him. Now, death sentence is required. Now, I know we live in a country and a state in which we have, and more and more people are against the death penalty and all that kind of stuff. Forget about that for a moment. Let's just look what Elohim has to say. He says, okay, the avenger of the blood himself shall slay the murderer. Wow. Someone has to, avenger is not mean someone who wants to get even. It's someone in that family generally has to make the final decision. Who are you going to pick to kill this person who killed a member of your family? Generally speaking, it's the oldest son. Generally speaking, it's the oldest son. What if he had no sons? Then they go to the nearest male, like a uncle or a cousin, someone who's related to the family by and through marriage and by and through whatever may take place. Generally, it was done by a man who had to slay the person who murdered somebody with a rod of iron, or murdered somebody with a rock or a stone, or murdered somebody with the wood. Now, that's pretty personal, don't you think? That's pretty heavy. We don't do that in our country, do we? when someone killed somebody, we really have appointed officials to the killing for us. Now, I'll ask you a question. If our country, our city, our state run on those bases, how would you personally feel? And if you don't carry out the execution, and this book tells you what happens if you don't carry out the execution, yes.
It appears that to God, justice is important, because if the laws of the country don't bring justice, then you have anarchy because nobody believes in the laws, and then a lot of people are jeopardized rather than just the guilty.
Okay, my question wasn't that, though. I understand that point. My question was, suppose someone killed me. Your son would have to kill that person. Well, I'm sorry, what?
Might be second line.
No, has to be the born son. Cannot be a female. That's the law. Don't what you understand? How personal is that? Is that really close? Or is it say, well, I'm going to let some official in Sacramento in some prison somewhere pull the switch? Shoot him with a bunch of drugs so he dies. Is that way God thinks? No. It's the way we think? Yeah, we think that way. I don't want to kill anybody. You kill him for me. And I won't even watch it.
The problem is I've heard people say, I don't feel justified even though he's dead now.
No. Let me ask you another question. Would that deter killing?
Yes.
Why? Okay, we have simple answers to simple questions, but we've never lived in a society that really did that. Now, the Muslim society does do that.
See, the problem isn't the death penalty or not having a death penalty.
No.
It's that once you make a decision, you execute whatever that decision is quickly. Because a lot of states have a death penalty. But if you don't execute that death penalty within a reasonable amount of time, you let people sit in jail 20, 30, 40, 50 years, is it really a death penalty?
I'm just saying it's very fascinating to really try to picture this that personal. Quote, we as Christians would have a hard time killing a fellow human being that killed one of our family. Even though God says to do that. We would say, oh, I forgive you. I forgive you of your sins and transgression to killing my son or my daughter or whatever it is. My little two-year-old baby you killed, remember, bird. I will forgive you because I can't kill you because I'm a Christian. That's our society today, right? Okay. I'm not for input because, see, I didn't come from that world. Yes.
I don't think so. I think pacifism is really easy to talk and not very easy to live. There are a lot of Christians that can talk about forgiveness, 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 but a lot of them haven't even lived through that kind of situation. I don't think they can properly say exactly how they would deal with it if it came.
Now, he talks about another situation. Oh, you got some more comments here? Bill?
If I personally saw someone do my mom or my dad or my brother, personally saw it, I would have no problem capping them. But then society would say, well, you've taken the law in your
own hands. Society has taken the law in your own hands. They can't do that, see? We don't live in this society. However, they can't take the law in their own hands either. They have to come to the city of refuge to find out what really took place. You just cannot assume that you could take vengeance on it on the spot. However, you know, they're talking about witnesses. Later on, we keep talking about this chapter. if there's no one around, someone gets murdered, and there's two witnesses seeing it, those witnesses are required to carry out the execution. Wow. How would you like to be a witness of someone you don't even know who it is? Maybe it's someone you don't even like. Maybe it's somebody you despise. Oh, we're the crapper guy, and someone comes and kills him, and you're a witness to it. You could do one of two things. Keep silent, because you didn't like him in the first place. Or you can't, because God says now you have to kill him, because he's killed that person. We say, wait a minute, isn't there grounds for justification for coming killing somebody with God? What is the justification? Justice. What? Now, let's go to verse 21. It says, now, your translations has this thing as or in an enemy. It's enmity. You go, if you are angry at someone and you smite him, and he dies, then what happens to you? You will be put to death. This includes, by the way, we will keep on, it includes with your fist. If you can't beat somebody to death with your fist, if you do, you're a murderer in the eyes of God. That you did it, that you are angry at them. Now, here goes this point where someone gets accidentally being killed and there's no anger, no waiting, no harm against him, and then he kills somebody by accident. Now he goes to the place of safety. Well, that is a city of refuge. How long is he supposed to stay there? Till what? Yeah. And then he gets to go back home. No one can require of his life. What happens if he leaves before the priest dies? Okay. That's an odd ruling, isn't it? He still did it by accident, but he can't go home. It's like he's been put in prison. He can't leave the walled city of the house of the six cities. It's like, quote, state prison, we would call him today. He can't leave until the warden is dead. And then he can leave. We don't think that way, do we? But God had that in mind. And he said, by the way, if you leave before the warden's dead, you're as good as dead. Yes. We'll talk more about that in a minute.
Well, I'm not saying I have it all figured out, but the woman caught in adultery, she and her adulterator, that's not a word, they're both guilty of death. And while Yeshua didn't exactly free them, he was an instrument of their freedom. The death penalty was...
Okay, that's a different issue. I want to stick here for a minute, because the book will complete the story. I understand what you're saying. Okay, I understand what you're saying. Go ahead.
Can his family move into that city with him?
No.
He has to live there by himself?
Live by himself, then he goes back to his home after the high priest dies.
So the city is only for people who are running from the law.
Who kill somebody accidentally.
So yeah. It is a prison.
It is a prison. He cannot leave that city.
That's awful.
Well, that's not what God thinks.
Yeah. But if it's accidental or it's self-defense...
No. It says accidental. He was not his enemy. He was not even out sought to do him harm whatsoever. And he wasn't angry. And something happened. He accidentally or suddenly killed the person by not even knowing him. Not even knowing him. Guess what? Until the high priest dies. Well, he probably got visitors coming. My family may come and see him, like we have now in our prisons. I don't know the detail. All I'm seeing, doesn't read what it says. Well, whether you agree with it or not, it's not an issue. It's what's written.
Well, I know, but you can't have... So your family can't...
These cities are for the cities of the Levites and Levites only. Levites, this is a Levite city. It belongs to Levites. All 48 of them belong to the Levites. Six of them are for a place of refuge. Still belong to Levites. They don't belong to... The inheritance belongs to them and nobody else. Sorry, what?
Who takes care of the family?
I would assume somebody else in the family would, like the older brother or whomever it is, would have to take care of the family. I mean, back then, it wasn't like, oh, I need money to get survive. No, you have a land, you have fruit, you have crops. Didn't have to pay taxes for the land. You know, today, when we work for a living, we have to pay taxes because we're working. And when we are very, very well, in good shape, good health, we have to pay taxes because we're in good health. You don't believe me? Social Security and Medicare. If you're sick, miserable, unemployed, guess what? You don't have to pay any Medicare. But if you're working for a living, doing a good job, you're healthy, and guess what? The government comes along and says, I'm going to take money from you because you're healthy. That's the way it works. Yes?
Is it saying nobody else can go into these cities except refuge people?
They can't live there. No, anybody can go into Levite city to talk to Levites, be taught by the Levites, be educated by the Levites. Yes, but not to live there. It's not their home. It's not their place. It's not where they live. It's where the Levites live. It's like we could say, well, then if I'm a Manassite, and I don't like living in the territory, which I'm going to move my family over here. I'm going to live over here in Judah. Not with God.
But couldn't you live there for those 10 years until the high priest dies, and then you go back to your own city?
Wait until the priest dies.
But maybe the priest is 25 years old. He's going then to live for 40 years.
When was a high priest ever appointed a high priest? At the age of 20? He was much older than that. Yes.
I just see it as a preventive measure. I deal with my kids all the time, and at work we have safety classes all the time. And, you know, I mean, something where somebody died by accident, there are a variety of different ways, but, like, one of the things I think of is being out in the field with a pickaxe and somebody swings it and the person's too close. You know, something like that. And it's, I mean, to me, I think, yeah, it's horrible to do something on accident like that and then have to live with it.
We can disagree with what it's written. That's fine. What I'm saying, there has a reason behind all this. The end of the chapter is not there yet.
I just think that if you had something hanging over your head, even if it was to be by accident, I think it would help people be a lot more careful.
I'm reading what it says here in the book of Numbers. I'm not reading anyplace else. Now, God does grant mercy, permits mercy. But that's different. We're not talking about mercy right here. We're talking about blood. The issue is blood. 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 Blood! That's the subject matter here. Do you disagree with me? Well, let's continue on. He said, now, if anyone who kills anybody, the murderer shall not be put to death by the mouth of the should be put to death by the mouth of witnesses. But one witness cannot do that. He said, you shall take no, some of your translations call it satisfaction, but basically you shall take no kapur, no atonement. Kapurim does not fit in this case. There is no way you can pardon the person. God says you cannot pardon the person. Right? That's what it says. And don't try to give him, don't cover up what he has done. Even if it's done by accident. Now, sometimes accidents are caused by carelessness. Okay? But that means carelessness. We have that law in our country, right? You could be in trouble because of why? Of negligence. You should have known it could kill somebody, and you just said, well, I'm going to do it anyway. And something happens, and someone's dead. In our country, in our law, in this state, in this California, you could go to jail for that. Believe me? What happens if you get an automobile accident and you could have prevented it? You're guilty. Does that agree with God? Yeah. What happens if you are chopping away with an axe, knowing the head's got to loose, bad, and you got people around, but you swing and whap it, and the head comes off, it kills somebody in behind you. Are you responsible, state of California?
Yes.
Is God said you're responsible?
Yes.
Now, the difference between how God says to handle it compared to how California says to handle it is entirely different because we're not Israel. Now, Let's go to the 33rd verse. Just read what it says here now. You shall not pollute the land where ye are. For blood, it defiles the land, and the land cannot be kupur. There is no kupurim. For the blood that is shed, even if it is by accident, therein. But the blood of him that sheds it. Now, Young's little translation has a little bit different weight. The latter part is this. It is not pardoned for the blood which is shed in it except by the blood of the man who sheds it. Now the high priest dies. Has the penalty been completed? Yes. When the high priest dies, it is finished. Now there is a covering. We are not talking about Aaron. We're talking about the Messiah who was the high priest, died, and came back. He's still alive, but death took it. Do you understand what I'm saying? His blood paid the price. His blood paid the price so the land can be purified. All biblical principles here. Now, we say, well, yeah, okay, it's a bunch of words. We don't want to talk about it. Verse, that's the last verse. Defile not therefore the land which ye shall inhabit it. Why? Because that's where I live. Oh, you think God has something in mind? How can the blood of a land be purified? Any land. It has to be done by the blood. Now, we didn't tell you how the high priest died. It doesn't matter. It doesn't say the priest was killed. It doesn't matter. But the Messiah did a whole lot more than just die. Yes?
To put it the way Paul did in Colossians 2, he said that there was a certificate of ordinances that was against us.
Yeah,
that has been taken away and nailed to his cross.
The high priest died. He really took the penalty. And now we have a different rules, if I use that terminology, and now you're under the grace and mercy of God. Now, as to wait for the priest to die, seems like that's unfair. You're in prison until the priest dies. No, if you personally ask yourself a real personal internal question, if you by your negligence, your foolishness, caused the death of somebody, would you rejoice? How would you feel you're freed from it? When the high priest did something for you. So you have to wait a little while? He already did an awful lot. So I look at these things as that's where I live. So in our world, in our quote Christian world, it may be difficult for us to try to say, I'm going to fulfill those things. On the other hand, if someone accidentally kills somebody in the Christian world, and you're a Christian, what are you going to do? You're not going to kill them. Because why? The high priest did. Already paid the blood. The blood has been spilled. The blood has happened. Where did the Messiah's blood go? It went to the earth. In the life of any animal, including human beings, life is in the blood. When the blood is gone, no more life. Now, we're talking about blood of murder, blood of death. We're talking about someone who died of a heart attack or someone died of a lot less of oxygen or someone died in a fire. We're talking about killing. We're talking about blood that has been spilt. Then with God, that's very, very serious because I dwell there. I dwell amongst you. Okay. Yes.
When it says the land, is that talking about the earth or is it talking about the masses of people?
Any land that God says, I dwell there. That's the land. Now, in this particular case, it was a physical land that was described in the 34th chapter on that boundary line, okay, that territory.
That's the land. He said, that's mine. I dwell there. Okay? Now, God dwells now, quote, in us, end quote. Use that terminology. And so in our own home, in our own life, that's where he dwells. Blood should not be there. So it keeps us. If any deterrent may not be deterrent for your neighbor, but it should be deterrent for you. Don't take vengeance. Don't take vengeance. Vengeance are mine, saith the Lord. Yes.
Well, when it says pray for the land of Israel, is that that's to me, that's referring to the people that live there in Israel, not the land itself.
Wherever God has placed them, but not wherever God is at. It is where I dwell. Okay, that's very, very important. Now, God dwells with the people of Israel. How he dwells with them, I don't have the complete picture of it, because he left the land of Egypt, left the land of Israel. He no longer lives there anymore. He said, I left, I departed, I don't want to live there anymore. But that's history. When we talk about before they go into the land of promise, before they're going into that land, these things were set up prior to going into that land. Next book is the death of Moses. All right? And so these have been set up for a reason. Now, don't shed blood on my property, because it's mine. Wait a minute. Didn't you give that to me? I'm an Ephraimite. Yes, I did give it to you as an inheritance, but it is mine. Ooh. So when you say, I inherit it, I get to keep it, how long do I get to keep it? Until I decided you don't get to keep it anymore. God does take his things back. He says, all the gold is mine. I got a lot of gold. I actually physically own gold. Guess who it really belongs to? God. And if he wants it back, go ahead. What am I going to do about it? I'm not going to die for it. Yes.
I was looking up the phrase revenger of blood. And it looks like revenger is the same word as redeemer or redeem.
Right.
Is that the same?
Right. So same kind of redemption. It's the same kind of to redeem. Okay. When a day of Yom Kippurim, it is a day of redemption, a day of redeeming. Because we recognize, wow, I am really pardoned here. Really completely pardoned. All is finished. All is gone. Wow. But it took the blood of the high priest to do that. In the next chapter, 36, briefly, that was kind of self-explanatory, and it had to do with, by the way, it says here, verse 6, that they can marry whomever they want to marry. I know that a lot of people believe that God always wanted appointed marriages, that mom and dad appoint who they want. It's never in the Bible to find any place, except in rare, rare cases. They never appointed anybody to marry this person. That woman cannot marry anybody except that one. That guy can't marry anybody except that one. They weren't appointed at the point of birth. There's nothing biblical about it. Can't find it anywhere. So married by appointment or by the mom and dad does not exist in the Bible. And here's real good evidence. Hey, they can move whoever they want. But anyway, it's kind of like saying this has a heritage of how the land has remained within that family or that branch, that tribe that's doing something from the center. Where is the branch coming out from? From where? From a house. What house was it in? Huh? No. Israel, all of Israel, were outside of that house. Every one of them. Who was inside the house? Yeshua. The throne. The inner tabernacle. That's who lived there. Wasn't a Jew. It wasn't a Levite. It wasn't a Russian. It wasn't a Chinese. It wasn't an American. Wasn't a black man. Wasn't a white man. It was the creator of heaven and earth. That's where he lived. That's why he said, this is where I live. I live in that land. Guess what they took across the Jordan River? A house of God. The tabernacle. the Holy of Holies, the Ark. Remember the Ark went through first? Remember when they crossed over, the Ark went through first? So now, this is very important. As they're reaching in, he really does not want anybody to kill anybody. And if you do it by accident, I know what you should have done and you didn't do. Therefore, I put you, quote, in prison until the high priest dies. Guess who makes the decision when the high priest dies? The same one makes the decision when you die. Your time is numbered. Not because of science, not because of heritage of mom and dad living 104. It's assignment by Creator of Heaven and Earth says, now's the time. I'm going to take your life. He did it with Aaron. He's going to do it to Moses. He did it to Samuel. Samuel only lived for 52 years. And that was it. Goodbye. So, you know, it's when God makes that assignment. And I don't know how often it is. The Bible doesn't tell you how often it takes place. It doesn't matter. What I'm trying to say today is that when we enter the Numbers, they're entering into this place called God's land. And the ark was the first thing that entered into that land. And that was his throne. Yes, you had a question?
It just seems that man, the land, sin and blessing are all tied together. You can't separate them.
Like Ehud?
Yeah. You know, it's true. Because even in Chronicles, when it says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, first he says, I'm going to forgive their sin and heal their land. It's, we cannot separate.
How do you
separate.
Heal the land? It's bloody. Okay,
we cannot
how can he
separate.
Heal the land? How can he cover it up? By the death of his own son. That's how it works.
Yeah.
All right, I'm over time. Sorry. But next week, I'll have a brief rundown of Numbers. Real brief. I'm not going to go through every chapter. I'm going with about five chapters real quickly and just outline some of the major things that we should try to remember.